Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, October the 5th, and welcome to our commentary. Before I get into our commentary, I just want to wish Tom Grieve a very happy retirement. Tom Grieve, for those of you who are familiar with the North Texas area, he is associated with the Texas Rangers. He was a player. He started out in the 60s with the organization. He became a player. Then he became a general manager in the 1980s. And then in the, I think it was the mid-90s, he became the voice of the Rangers on television. He was what they call the analyst. You know, there's always two people, the play-by-play and then the analyst. Tom Grieve was the analyst. And, you know, you get used to the same fellow for 25 years. Well, today he's calling his last game. And it's just not going to be the same without Tom Grieve next year. But I know everybody has their time, and Tom has decided to retire, and I wish him the very best as a fan. You know, I have to tell you a little story about Tom Grieve. One time I actually called him and left him a voicemail with an opinion about the Rangers. He actually called me back. He was very nice. He was the general manager of the team. This is maybe 20 years ago. And I was actually very surprised that he would take the time to call me back, but he did. And I was just very impressed with that he would take the time to call a fan back. Well, that's probably why he was such a popular guy. So best of luck to Tom Grieve. Just an absolutely wonderful guy. Well, let's talk a little bit about the big stories of the day, because there is one that is huge. And if you're not familiar with it today, or if you're not up to speed with this, you're going to find out in the next 60 days when you put gasoline on your car. OPEC has decided to cut production by 2 million barrels a day. That is huge. That is a nuclear bomb in economic terms. Now, some of you are old enough like me to remember OPEC back in 1973, 1974. They had an embargo against the United States. It was an argument over Israel. And if you remember 73, 74, when the price of gasoline went crazy, and when we had the gas lines, all of that, it repeated itself in 79, 80, but it began in 73, 74. And it was just a horrible time. In so many ways, that period of high inflation is what made the 1970s such a difficult economic period. The OPEC embargo in 73, 74, and then what happened with Iran and that oil crisis at the end of the decade. But this is horrible. This is an absolutely horrible decision by, well, horrible for the United States. I'm sure OPEC doesn't care. But it's horrible for two reasons. Number one, because the President Biden, President of the United States, Joe Biden, was telling them to pump more oil. And then when you mix that with the fact that we've cut our production, then you have this perfect storm where we're not going to have enough oil. Now, President Biden today was talking about releasing more barrels from the strategic reserves. Well, you can't do that. We've already released too much, and there's a reason they call it the strategic reserve. It's if you have a reserve. Now, one of the good things was that President Trump filled up the reserve with a lot of cheap energy, and now we're going to have to replenish that reserve with a lot of very expensive oil. So, look, I've said it a million times. One of the biggest mistakes that the Biden administration made was to reverse the Trump energy policy, and now I think we're getting a taste of it. And it's going to be terrible. The price of gas is going to go up further. It's not just the price of gasoline that goes up. Everything else goes up, as you know, because everything is transported. And then on top of that, you got to cool your home. You got to heat your home. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's all unbelievable. And it's all traced to one decision that was made by the Biden administration to pander, if you will, to all the climate change activists. Instead of taking care of the country, he decided to pander to the climate change activists. And this is what you get when you do that. Again, I've said it a million times. I believe in climate change. There is climate change, but you don't wreck your economy or pander to the climate change activists. So what are we going to do now? I don't know. But I know we've got enough oil in Texas to take care of the country and to reverse what OPEC was doing. We got enough oil in Alaska to do that. We've got enough fracking in Pennsylvania to do it. We can do this. We can get out of this hole very easily. But we need an administration with a realistic view and a realistic energy policy. So that's another reason to get out and vote. That's another reason to get out and vote. What a mess. What a mess. This is, I think I mentioned it yesterday, that this could happen. Well, this is the kind of October surprise that the Biden administration did not want. This is the kind of October surprise that is going to wreck the American economy in ways that, unless you remember 73, 74 like I do, and unless you remember 79, 80, 81 like I do, some of the younger people are going to be in a real shock when you see what happens to the economy when the price of gasoline goes up as much as it will because of what OPEC is doing. What can the United States do about it? Nothing directly. We cannot tell OPEC what to produce, but we can take care of ourselves. We can produce our own energy so we don't have to worry about what it does. We were doing that under President Trump. We decided to reverse policy, and this is what happens. This is what happens. So all of you who didn't like Trump, I understand you didn't like his character. You didn't like his tweets. You didn't like his personality. But, man, he got some good results. He had some good results. Maybe you didn't like him. I get that. He had his personality. I understand that. But, my goodness, we didn't have problems like this within the White House. Believe me, we didn't. Well, the New York City mayor, Mayor Adams, and the governor of New York, I think her name is Koshal, they've decided to ask the federal government for money to take care of all these migrants arriving in buses. And this is hilarious. They declare themselves sanctuary cities. They said, bring them in. You can come in. And now that they're coming in, now that they're coming in huge numbers, they're like pleading for help. They're asking the federal government for help. Well, I don't know if they're going to get it, but it just shows you what a bunch of hypocrites they were. They wanted to be a sanctuary city. Well, this is what happens when you're a sanctuary city. It's just unbelievable. I don't know how else to say it. The Supreme Court started a new term on Monday. You've heard the expression, the first Monday of October. That's when the Supreme Court starts hearing cases for the new term. There are going to be some very interesting cases in this term. You know, last year, of course, you had the abortion decision, the Roe v. Wade reversal, overturning of Roe v. Wade. You also had a very important decision on gun control, on the Second Amendment. And you had a huge decision on the EPA when the Supreme Court basically told the EPA, look, if you cannot do something that the Congress has not authorized you to do. Well, there's going to be some big decisions coming up this year, too. And one of the biggest ones is on affirmative action. So we'll be looking at that. I don't think they've started the hearings yet on these, but we'll be checking up on these decisions. Now, we're not going to have the final decisions again until next May or June, but there are going to be some interesting ones, and we'll do our best to follow them. We'll try to bring in some legal experts to talk about some of the decisions. There's going to be one on gerrymandering, you know, the way the congressional districts are drawn up. That's coming out of Alabama. And then there's going to be one on affirmative action. I think that's coming out of New York, I think. So we'll see. But it should be a very interesting session, as the last one was, of course. You know, there is now evidence that the Republicans are sort of closing the midterms in a very positive way. And one of the best examples of this is a brand new poll that came out indicating that the Republicans are gaining, but they're gaining not necessarily in the, you know, face-to-face polling, meaning candidate A versus candidate B, not so much in that. And in that, you get those reports. But if you look at the issues, that is the issues that people trust one party more than the other, what you're finding out is that the public, the voters, are telling the pollsters that they trust the Republicans more on issues like crime, on the economy, on border issues, and those are huge. Those are going to be huge issues in many of these campaigns. So that's why we think that the Republicans are picking up speed, and they're closing. They're closing quickly, and they're closing very effectively. You're still going to have some close elections. That always happens. For example, in Georgia, in Pennsylvania. But if you look at places like Arizona and New Hampshire, what you're beginning to see is that the incumbent Democrat, his or her lead is not probably comfortable when you're an incumbent. Anytime you have an incumbent, you know, under 50%, constantly under 50%, that's a very dangerous place for an incumbent to be. So I think it's fair to say that you're seeing the Republicans are closing this election in a very effective way. And I do expect the Republicans to pick up, as I said yesterday, anywhere between 50 and 40 seats in the House. A lot depends on turnout. And since I believe the turnout is going to be very good for the Republicans, then I'll go ahead and tell you right now, I think the Republicans are going to pick up like 30 seats in the House. The Senate will be more contested because it's just different types of elections. I expect the Republicans to win the Senate 52-48. And the two seats that will put the Republicans over the top are going to be Georgia and Nevada. Those are the two seats that will make up that 52 that we're talking about. There is a possibility we will hold Pennsylvania. I think the Republicans will hold Pennsylvania and Georgia. Georgia and Nevada are going to be the two seats that will put us at 52. Now, I should say that we're going to be looking at all of these races on Friday in our podcast with my friend Barry Castleman. So I'll let you know when that's available so you can hear Barry go through all of these different races, and he's really good at it. He's really good analyzing all of these races. Well, on this day in history, in 1953, the Yankees did something that had never been done before and never been done since. They won their fifth World Series in a row. 53, 52, 51, 50, and 49. Those were the five consecutive years that the Yankees won the World Series. No team has ever done that. The closest that anybody came to that was the Yankees themselves in 98, 99, 2000, and the Oakland A's back in 72, 73, 74. But nobody has had more than three. Well, the Yankees had five, and they won their fifth one on this day in 1953. So that's a little bit of baseball history for you. By the way, speaking of baseball, check out my new post over at The American Thinker today, Wednesday. And I'm talking about something that is sort of fading in baseball, and that is the complete game. Complete games is when the starting pitcher finishes the game. That's something that used to be very common, and now it's very uncommon. And something that a baseball fan like me who loves the traditional game really misses out. So check out my article over at The American Thinker about complete games and the disappearance of complete games in baseball today. Thank you very much for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Have a great day, and I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.